You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Joining me for the first time in a blue moon is the man, the myth, the legend, Kim Holmes. What is up, Buttercup?
Up, big, bad, beautiful rocket ship up in that stratosphere. Let me hear you loud and clear. This is your astronaut, Kimbo. I'm back on the scene in my cooking machine, going ooh-poopy-dooby-doo-wah. Ooh-poopy-doo, ooh-poopy-doo, ooh-poopy-doo-dee-wah-wah-wah-wah. Hello, Marines everywhere.
You sound great, man. What's up?
Well, I'm sitting up for a change at the counter, shooting the breeze with you.
That's awesome, and, man.
And the millions of listeners you have.
Exactly. What about, so tell everybody, you've had a bad back, yes?
Very bad back. I had a tough fall. I had a stent put in. Congestive heart failure, and then my back started to go bad, and so they couldn't give a injection into my lower spine because my blood's thin, the blood thinners, so that would make it worse, of course, paralyze me. So I got to wait a while, but my back is healing. It's slowly healing and getting better, and I'm starting up with my physical therapy and cardio rehab and all that stuff. So here I am, baby. Bring it on.
Bring it on.
The answer man is here. I'm sorry I missed Thanksgiving.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? You missed Thanksgiving. What the?
So I didn't eat anything at Thanksgiving.
What?
You heard it right.
Whoa.
No turkey, nothing.
Did you?
Yeah, I was miserable.
Did you? Did you?
But I'm feeling better now. Looking forward to solid food again. I'm down to about a little under 240 pounds. So
down from
285.
Ooh, big man. There's a guy who listens to the show, Chris, in Massachusetts, former Marine.
Yes.
He went from 500 pounds to, this morning he sent me a shot on a scale, he's at 238.
Great, congratulations.
How about
that? That's kicking ass.
How about that?
That's spectacular.
And he didn't do anything, you know, like getting his stomach, you know, what do they call it, bariatric surgery, or I don't even know anymore. Lap band or whatever they did. Didn't do any of that. Just old-fashioned way. And he's skiing today.
Oh, good for him. Boy, there's lots of snow up there to ski.
Well, I've been hearing about the weather. There is a woman who listens. Her name's Bev. And Bev lives in Saskatchewan.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
When somebody from Grand Forks, right, that's colder than shit, says, oh boy, that's what you get. Okay.
Now that's great though. She's got tons of snow.
She's butch. And, that's pretty butch, right?
I bet her boards are waxed.
Bev is butch, man. Because I'll tell you what, that is, Saskatchewan is no joke in the winter, man. No joke. Because
of a nice day today. It's only, 10 or 15 degrees today.
And, oh, that's
but
nice.
But tomorrow,
yeah,
we're going down to 22 below, baby. That is below the zero.
Below zero, just in case that you're confused about that. 22 below zero. Yeah. And that's a, and I think in Saskatchewan they said they were going to have winds of 18, which puts the wind chill at about 45 below zero. So there you go. But as the people in North Dakota say, keeps the riffraff out.
It does. It does do that.
Or at least gets them to the homeless shelter. One of the two.
So, if they don't, he's on their way.
You're no kidding.
Yeah, it's and the wind's going to pick up to about 30 miles an hour.
Boom, boom, boom. And you got to see my oldest son, my number one son, J-Mac.
Did I have a good time with them? Beth and I yucked it up with Susie and Finn. My God, he's just a little moving machine. He was all over the house. And it was great to see him. And he's going to try to become a colonel.
Johnny boy.
Johnny boy. Sir Johnny boy.
How about that? Now, Kim met John when he was 15 years old.
Yeah.
John is 33 now. And he's going to turn 30. Yeah, he's going to turn 33 in January. So John's first job was washing dishes for Kim. And we had John and Susie's rehearsal dinner in Kim's restaurant. John worked for Kim for a long time. And
10 years.
Yeah.
10 years.
And so let me just tell you, I don't say this because he's my son. John's a good dude. He's a straight up good guy, and so very, very proud of him. But yeah, you got a chance to see him as John is between school and reporting to the 2nd Marine Division. So they went up and spent time with his wife's family up in western North Dakota. And then got a chance to see some friends and got a chance to see Kim. So,
that was huge. It was huge for me and Beth. Just tickled pink. I can't tell you how excited I was when I walked through the door. All 12 foot of him. He keeps growing. Stop it now.
Yeah. John's a big dude, isn't he?
Yes, he is. A big dude and a big shoulders, man. Got a lot to carry.
That's good. That's very good. Because I used to give him a tough time when he was a kid. He had, like, skinny shoulders.
Oh, he was just a little dyke. And then he toughened up real quick. And he was as good a server as I've ever had.
Kim wanted John to buy the restaurant.
Yeah, but he did the best thing for you.
And I said, not only no, but hell no, man. That's a bad life. It's a good life.
It's a difficult life.
It's a tough life if you want a family and if you want to stay married. It's a tough life. And
yeah.
And yeah, I don't know how people do it when they're young and raise families and things like that. I've talked to, in fact, the guy who, Ellie's Ivy that went into your place, I mean, they both love that business and, but it's tough when you run the joint and you got to be down there every night, to have a family and to keep all that, between the lines. So,
his wife, at Ellie's Ivy, she worked with Susie.
Yeah.
At the Paris K. Yeah, they've got history, and but they're, you know, it's a way of life. You either love it or don't get near it. Just go in to eat and leave.
Yeah. Here's an email.
I love, as you know.
No, it's your thing, man. It's your thing. The here's an email from Big Dave in Vacaville. Tell the chef good to have him back. Be well, boys.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be back.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you sound good too. I talked to you not a few times, but a bunch of times. Yeah, and some days you did not sound very good.
No, I didn't at all. I just, you know, it's that stage, man. But with the weight loss and the less pressure on my heart, I'm feeling better and breathing and I'm feeling great, actually. I'm loving it.
No kidding.
No shit.
Well, you know, you read and they say the one thing that affects your quality of life more than any other, right, second to smoking, is your weight. And it affects your self-image, but it affects all these different parts of your life. And so it pays to watch your weight.
Yeah. For me, I've always been beautiful, regardless of what I weigh. But being thinner and getting thinner, it's a great feeling. I'm in all my old clothes that I haven't been in 10 years.
Holy shit.
It just kind of gives you a new attitude.
Check it out. Kim, we've got all these new clothes, man. Where'd you get them? They were on the other end of my closet.
Yes, the far, far end of my closet. Behind the sweatshirts.
Yeah, my skinny clothes, man. I busted out my skinny clothes. So now,
pretty funny. I walked in the bedroom the other morning, and Beth says, "Where'd you get that?" Wait, what are you said we're not going to be buying clothes. I said, "Well, I didn't. I bought this about 10, 12 years ago."
Uh-oh.
Back off, friend.
That's right. So where will your weight? Where's your weight headed to?
Where is it heading to?
Yeah, where do you think it'll wind up?
I want to get down to around 220 within the next year.
Whoa!
And eventually down to 200. And that's enough. Last time I was 200, I was really stick man, but that's fine, you know. Still, then I can go to my left again.
Exactly, you'll be out doing doing your John Travolta impersonation for Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night Fever, right?
But yeah, it's just that, you know, just quality of life and being able to do stuff and eat what I want to eat. When I want to eat, but I don't eat anything much now. You know, a little yogurt, a little oatmeal, bananas, a lot of bananas, baby.
You like bananas?
I love bananas. Bananas and milk.
Oh, that's disgusting.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. I'd rather have a martini, but...
A martini.
You know. But yeah, things are going good, and it's kind of pleasant around here. But I've been anxious to answer questions from your listeners.
Well, that's good, because we don't got any.
Don't got any. Well, then we can just schmooze, baby. Schmooze the good life. And what are you going to do for Christmas now?
I don't know. They're all coming out. So I think the day after Christmas. Listen to this. The soundtrack, right, for Saturday Night Fever.
Yes.
Right? Sold 15 million copies in the U.S. alone. It was a top-selling album of all time before being supplanted by The Bodyguard, which was Whitney Houston 15 years later. It's the only disco record so far to win a Grammy Album of the Year, and only one of three soundtracks besides The Bodyguard and Oh Brother Where Art Thou to win in that category.
Wow.
It was the number one album on Billboard charts for the entire first half of 1978 and stayed on the charts until March of 1980. Long after... supposedly the death of disco. Not your friend.
Wow.
Not your friend disco either.
No. Oh, the dancing machine himself.
Yeah. So yeah, interesting. Interesting
that
stuff.
That was some movie. Vinny.
Right? Tony Manero, right? That was his name?
Yeah.
John Travolta. And Travolta had already been in Welcome Back, Kotter.
Had he been in, what was the other one?
Had he been in Grease yet? Oh no, he stars in Grease after, right? Because he couldn't get a job.
Fever, Grease game with the Australian lady.
Yeah, hello.
Beautiful woman.
Olivia Newton-John, who was
Olivia Newton? Yeah, thank you.
Was she?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Interesting. But then he doesn't do anything after. No, I think Grease is before that. And here's why I think that. Because he couldn't get a job after he did Saturday Night Live. And the next time you saw him in a major motion picture was Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. All of a sudden you see John Travolta, you know, being a murderer. And you're like, what the hell?
Being a junkie and a murderer.
Yeah, what happened to the white suit and the dance moves, man?
What happened to Goody Two Shoes?
But he does dance in there with Uma Thurman, right?
Yes, he does. They win a dance contest at a hamburger joint.
Right before she overdoses with cocaine. Which is sends the plot in a different direction.
He thought she was taking cocaine, but it was heroin.
Oh.
And that's why she overdosed. God, that was a freaky scene, man.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what, that movie, and again, one of the great all-time scenes of a movie. And I say that because the dialogue with Samuel L. Jackson at the end of that, where he grabs Ringo's gun. He goes, Ringo, now I just had a spiritual experience, right? Now, am I the tyranny, or is my gun the tyranny? And he goes through that whole thing. But I'm in a good mood today, Ringo, and I'm trying hard not to kill your ass, because normally you would be dead as fried chicken. Samuel L. Jackson, man, that's where he explodes to be the cool dude that he is. That scene in Pulp Fiction, in the diner at the end, when he's dressed in after they clean out the car and all that, vaults Samuel L. Jackson into like one of the coolest guys in the hemisphere forever.
He's always been the coolest guy. He was so good in that, and he didn't win an Academy Award for that performance.
That's impossible.
He was spectacular in that movie.
Well, the best part is I love like guys like that, and they go through like some kind of spiritual intellectual experience.
Yes,
right. So his character, he's a hitman, and so John Travolta, he's not supposed to be like a spiritual guy. But he is, right? He's a deep thinking, and he's so this thing has an effect on him, and he's telling Vincent that, Vincent, you don't know. That was a miracle. And then they have this argument about what defines a miracle. And so it's awesome. It is awesome.
It's so cool. And, he was good in every one of Tarantino's movies.
Yeah, it's hard to find.
He wasn't in the last one, which I saw and I liked a lot. Bob didn't like it.
Bob didn't
like it? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. Bob didn't like it?
Bob thought it was a little slow. I thought it was spectacular because the visuals in it, the cigarettes he smoked, he advertised these Apple cigarettes or something, and the dog food that, I can't remember the name of the dog food that, what's his name, fed his dog a pit bull. I just thought it was great. But anyway, I liked it. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. And just, and the scene, the neons, the cars, the street scenes in this movie are right out of 1960, what was that, 69, 68?
I don't know.
It was phenomenal.
Right in your, so what you're telling me is right in your wheelhouse, man.
Yeah. And, but it didn't end like the Manson thing did. It ended like you would want it to end. Once upon a time kind of thing in Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's his version, his dream. But, I had to explain that to Bob.
Bob.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, then did he anyway, did he reevaluate his opinion? Wait, here's an email.
No, I guess. I thought it was an excellent movie, and he should see it again. I doubt if he ever will.
An assignment to go see it again?
Yeah, I did. I'm going to watch it again on demand. It just came on. So I'll watch it again. Loved it. But there's not a question.
Yeah.
What was Samuel L. Jackson's first movie that he played in?
I don't know. The first
Broadway play, off Broadway plays when he was starting as an actor. Yeah. It was Coming to America with Eddie Murphy.
Get out.
Arsenio Hall, he was the guy that tried to rob McDowell's hamburger joint.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he came in, with a shotgun, you Emmer Effers, and screaming and hollering like he always does so beautifully. Just flipped him with a mop handle upside down. It was a great scene. That was the first time I saw Samuel L. Jackson. And then he went on to much better stuff.
Hold on, listen to this. Tony Manero. And the Bee Gees. Who had ever heard of the, well, people had heard of the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, my God. I had friends who lost their minds over this. They bought those Angel Flight pants. I can probably say I never wore any of them. But let me tell you, man, dancing was a big deal. What did you do, man? You were like a hippie guy, Janis Joplin and all that. What did you do during the disco era, man?
Well, the disco era kind of passed me by because those pants,
yeah,
and the silk things,
yeah,
and all the chains around your neck and your shirt down to your belly button,
right?
Just missed it. It wasn't my thing.
I was more
into being naked.
What? So you were? Did you ever go out? Because the disco dancing thing, that was huge, man.
I'll tell you a story.
Just roll in.
We're in Europe. We're in Europe, and we're in Monte Carlo. And Bob and I were going out to this club with our friend we're staying at, Peter Taylor. He was a commodities broker and living in Monte Carlo with his wife and four boys. But we went to this disco. And so Bob and I had our flowery shirts and, wasn't the disco pants, but they were slacks.
Right.
And we were dancing like crazy out there. And there were these, I've never seen more beautiful women than in Monte Carlo. And so we walk over to these women and they were dancing. We'd ask, would you like to dance? And they just turned their backs on us and danced away. I said, I guess we're not rich enough, baby. And it was a club that Peter belonged to, and they brought over all the the liquor that he ordered with gold chains with his name around each bottle. And we were drinking tequila. And so we finished the bottle of tequila, and I had won that night about $1,000 at the casino, Grand Casino in Monte Carlo. And I said, "Oh, Peter, I'll take this. I got it. I got it." He says, "No, no, no, Kim. I got it." He says, "Oh, come on. Let me do it." He says, "All right, big shooter. Give him the bill. They give you the setups, but they charge you. When you finish a bottle, they charge you for the bottle." And a bottle of tequila back in 1974 cost me $125.
What?
Yeah, what? Yeah. And I went, "Oh, okay." I played it cool. I didn't go, "Oh, you can have it, Peter." No, I paid the bill. Jeez, that was my vacation money.
There you go. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, we did. We polished off half a bottle, and then I ordered that other one. So we had a fresh bottle on the tray.
All right, now hold on here.
We had fun. That Monte Carlo is some kind of place.
I know.
You have to be filthy rich just to drive through it.
Yeah, that's where I've never been. All right, this is Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. Now the scene starts with this dude walking up to him, right, and he's gonna rob him. And he has the gun stuck in his face, and there's Samuel L. Jackson sitting in the booth, right, by himself, because John Travolta's gone to the bathroom, and he's wearing Quentin Tarantino's clothes from the house they just left after they cleaned the blood out of the car. Okay, so everybody remembers the scene.
What's in the case?
My boss's dirty laundry.
The boss makes you do his laundry?
When he wants it clean.
Sounds like a shit job.
Funny, I was thinking the same thing.
Open it.
Afraid he can't do that.
I didn't hear you.
Yes, you did.
What's going on?
So we got a vigilante in our midst.
Shoot him in the face.
I hate to shatter your ego, but this ain't the first time I've had a gun pointed at me.
You don't think?
Tell me that. Who? I don't know who wrote that shit, but that stuff is that the best or what?
Quentin Tarantino wrote it.
Man, that, let me, it goes on, hold on.
You'll fucking end off that case, it'll be your last.
Stop causing problems, you'll get us all killed. Give him what you got and get him out of here.
Shut the fuck up, fat man, this ain't none of your goddamn business.
Be cool, honey bunny, be cool. No problem, I got it under control. Now, I'm going to count to three. If you don't open that case, I'm going to unload in your fucking face.
Just cocked the pistol.
We clear? One. Two. Three.
Okay, Ringo. You win. It's yours.
Open it.
What is it? What is it?
Is that what I think it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
God damn it, what is it? You let it go! You let it go! Let go of it!
Try this to be cool! Be cool!
Be cool, honey!
Be cool! Be cool! Tell that fucking bitch to chill!
Be cool, honey!
Feel that fucking bitch out!
Chill, honey!
Be cool, honey!
What a great...
Chill out, honey bunny.
All right, now tell her it's going to be all right.
It's going to be all right.
Promise her.
I promise.
Tell her to chill.
Just chill out, honey bunny.
All right, now tell me your name.
Yolanda.
All right, now Yolanda. We're not going to do anything stupid, are we?
Don't you hurt him.
Nobody's going to hurt anybody. We're all going to be like three little Fonzies here. And what's Fonzie like? Come on, Yolanda, what's Fonzie like?
Cool.
What?
Cool.
Correctamundo. And that's what we're going to be. We're going to be cool. Now, Ringo, I'm going to count to three. And when I count three, I want you to let go your gun, put your palms flat on the table, and sit your ass down. But when you do it cool. You ready? One, two, three.
You know, this whole scene's about 9 minutes long, so I can't play the whole thing. But you know what? When he does that whole thing about Ezekiel, and I've said that shit before, before I killed people, because I thought it was some cold-blooded shit. But today, some shit. You know, he does that whole thing. I never ever. Anytime Pulp Fiction's on, I see where it is in the movie just to watch that scene.
Yeah.
And now you don't have to like watch the whole movie to go ahead and watch the scene anymore because of the wonders of YouTube. But if it's on and I'm channel surfing, I will note where it is and I'll come back and I'll watch the end of it because it's such a great scene. And there's a whole, right? I mean, in that movie, how many different great scenes are there? There's the one where Chris Walken shows up, right? When Bruce Willis is a little kid, right? And he tells him he shoved his dad's watch up his ass. Right.
Yeah, that's how he got it out. Yeah,
but what's crazy is that Chris Walken, he doesn't do anything but play himself. It's like De Niro, right? De Niro he's just himself, and Samuel L. Jackson is the same way. He just plays himself. So kind of interesting, but that scene to me is awesome because it goes between the stupid, right? Like he said, right? And what's Fonzie like? And what's Fonzie like, Yolanda? He's cool.
Right. Yeah. Correctamundo.
Correctamundo. Here's an email. Mac, do you have a favorite Christmas movie? Please ask Kim and tell him, great to hear his voice again. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie, Kim?
Well, probably Miracle on 42nd Street.
Get out. Really?
No, well, that... Just because I'm a sentimental old Santa Claus fool, but the one with Jimmy Stewart is the one.
Yeah, I would say that's my favorite. It's a Wonderful Life.
In fact, I was surfing the other night, and I saw it, and I got the bits and pieces of it. It was just great. Yeah, that's a good movie. And you should see it at least once a year.
Yeah, no. At the end, you know, when everybody shows up. My favorite part is at the end where everybody shows up, right? And, you know, George has had this experience contemplating suicide. And, you know, what's interesting is the history of that movie is that it came out and Frank Capra made it. And it didn't do well at the box office. And so the history, when you read the history of that movie, and it was controversial because it deals with suicide in a culture that didn't do suicide.
No.
So I thought it was.
Didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't much about it back then. They do now.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I wanted there. What brings it to one? Well, I know what happened. The reason why it became such a huge movie is that whoever owned it, the studio that owned it,
yes,
allowed the copyright to lapse. And so cable TV starts out and there's no copyright on it. And so they play it ad nauseum for free.
Is that with Ted Turner?
Well, all of them, because there was no copyright on it. There's no copyright on it. Yeah, anybody could play it, and that's why you would see it all the time.
Just amazing.
So, and then it becomes this thing that it never was when it first came out. So it's amazing. Capra made he made some incredible movies. And the, yeah, ownership of copyright issued. A clerical error at the NTA, whatever that is, National Telefilm Associates, took over the rights to be to the film soon thereafter it was released, right? So it does its first major run, but a clerical error prevented the copyright from being renewed in 1974. Despite the last copyright, television stations that aired it still had to pay royalties because, though the film's images had entered the public domain, the film's story was still restricted as a derivative work of the published story, The Greatest Gift, right? Blah, 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 blah. The film became perennial holiday favorite in the 1980s, possibly due to its repeated showings each holiday seasons on hundreds of local television stations, right? It was mentioned during the deliberations of the Copyright Term Extension Act of 1998. So
yeah.
Anyway, so it's a clerical error that allows It's a Wonderful Life to become, you know, one that we all see. But again, my favorite part is at the end when everybody comes running in with their money and whatnot and saves them. So anyway, I don't want to say I get emotional, but I might shed a tear. That's the only one that I really would go out of my way to watch.
I'm exhausted in those movies.
Yeah. No
kidding. I love them.
No kidding.
I like Happy Endings, man.
She's funny. What about, here's an email. Mac, so the chef had no turkey at all? Nunca?
No.
No turkey?
No turkey at all.
For the first time ever in your life?
Pretty much, I would say yes.
Whoa.
That's how shitty I felt. You not eating dark meat and dressing on Thanksgiving? Are you crazy? Yes, I was. I was sick as a dog. I didn't want to eat anything. I think I had a banana and milk and a scoop of ice cream made into a little very thin shake. And that was my Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that was miserable. I'm gonna do beef for Christmas.
Prime rib? What are you going to do?
I have a porterhouse.
Oh.
That I am going to grill.
No, a porterhouse is what? Two steaks, right?
It's a filet on one side and a New York strip on the other. I bought it from this place back in New Jersey called Pat LaFrieda, which deals strictly in prime beef. And it weighs about 36 ounces with the bone in, of course. And looks like a T-bone, but it's not. It's got a big filet on one side and a gorgeous New York strip on the other. And it's tender and well marbled. Oh, God, can't wait. I've been waiting for a few months to chop into that. And I'll be up for it. That's for damn sure. And I'm going to cook it on top of the stove. In a cast iron skillet. And that's how I'm going to do that. That's how I used to do all the steaks before I had a grill at Sanders. And I just had cast iron skillets, and I did all my steaks in cast iron skillets. And it gets that crust on there. You know, like cooking a hamburger on a flat top.
Right.
You get that great crust.
You know, I for my birthday dinner, I took my daughters to Ruth Chris, and we ate. In fact, that was a week ago, tomorrow.
For 7th, last Saturday.
And I just finished eating the leftovers last night.
Well, the new steakhouse I'm working on right now is going to have that same oven that Ruth Christ has.
You've got to explain that oven thing to me.
Okay, it's an oven that is infrared, and it has drawers, sliding drawers with grates in them. But the very top of it is a flat top. That's how you start the steak to sear it and sear all the juices in it.
Okay.
And that is at 600 degrees. And you a couple of minutes on each side, and then you open the drawer and you put it under the 1500 degree heat, and then you get your grill marks and you get the best the best steak you can ever imagine.
It's seared flat on a grill, not a grill, but just on flat metal, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that sears it, and then you get the grill marks. Although I didn't notice grill marks on my steak at Ruth Chris. But then it sits in on a grill in indirect heat, and that's at how 1500 degrees?
1500 degrees.
Wow.
Right underneath it.
And so, is there a timer? How do you know, right? You're not going to be.
Honest, I haven't gone to school yet.
Okay.
I've just seen pictures and videos, but we have when the oven gets installed, we have a month of school how to use that grill. And I want to, when you come back to town when we're open next summer, I'm going to cook you a ribeye that's going to rock your world. I think we're going to sell bone-in ribeye. I think you're going to like it.
But I have
to learn to do it myself.
You've always said bone-in means...
Yep.
Bone-in means more flavor, yes?
It does. It does, exactly. And we're going to have a porterhouse pork chop. We're going to do prime rib. I'm pretty excited with this new equipment we're getting. I've never used it before, so I'll be going back to school in a couple of months here. Probably about March, I'll be starting to seriously study this stuff. They expect to be open in June or July. So, it's very exciting to have a real steakhouse. That does steak properly like you had for your birthday.
Interesting.
I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah. We shall see. Now, I mean, let me tell you, the food delicious, but it's not the way you grew up in your own joint, right? The way you did it was not that way, right? You did it a different way. You were able to, you could test steaks with your thumb, blah, blah,
yep.
blah, blah, blah. So you grew up using different technology and a different technique, which I think is interesting. So
I'm excited, a little nervous about the technology, but the demonstrations I've seen have really blown my mind about how much faster it is, how less the shrinkage is on the meat. Especially the prime rib, and only a whole prime rib you throw in there. And normally in a regular wind oven, it'll shrink 20%. Here it shrinks 2%.
Wow.
All the juices are in that prime rib. And it was the same as Sanders, the 2 to 5% shrinkage on an Alto Sham. But this new oven, it's called a combi oven. And man, it does so many things that just makes my head spin. You can steam, you can poach, you can take a fried egg and put it in there, and it'll hold for hours at sunny side up without getting hard or overcooked. I don't know how that happens, but,
but you,
it does.
But you need, you need to find out.
I'm really thrilled at my age to get involved in a brand new state-of-the-art kitchen where I can learn some serious stuff and maybe see how I can translate that into grilling for all of us. It's going to be lots of fun coming up this summer. But, yeah, the stuff, the kitchen, it's only going to be 100 seats. And so it's going to be very intimate, very tight, very cool.
What,
and very lush.
And let me just tell you, eating leftovers, I mean, and I even did the unthinkable, which is I just threw it in a microwave and heated it up. There was shrimp, there was two different pieces of steak, there was a gratin potatoes, there was mashed potatoes. So it was a lot of good food, and I didn't eat very much of it on any given night. But I will say this, I mean, good, even through the microwave, which I know Kim will tell me, like, what are you doing? But the steak still tasted delicious.
The thing is, Mac, with a microwave is not to overheat your, if you're reheating a steak, figure 1 to 2 minutes max. And if in a microwave, or take slices and slice your steak and cook it on a skillet and just warm it up that way. That's another way you can use warm up leftover steak and shrimp. But as long as you don't, turn the microwave to 5 minutes and walk away and then expect it to taste good, forget it.
No,
all you have to do is heat it up, and microwaves heat from the inside out. So a couple of minutes max, and you're in the front row.
I didn't even do that. I just did like 30 seconds. The other thing I've learned, though, is to let it sit, because that's, you know, and allow the juices and the flavor to kind of move around a little bit. But no, it was even a day old. Even days old. Good steak is good steak, man. I didn't eat very much of it on any given night. But I'll tell you what, it was delicious, absolutely delicious. Even leftovers like that. And so, yeah, I'm a fan. I've always been a fan. But when they brought it to me, I was thinking of you, because you could, even with my bad hearing, I could hear the meat sizzling on the plate.
Oh yes, and because it's so damn hot.
And obviously they give you the big warning with the plates. But how do they treat the plate? The plate is in an oven, and
on top of the window, the heat lamp. That's where I put my plates to keep them warm.
Right.
But most everybody will put those plates in an oven. And then when they put the steak on the plate, they'll take about an ounce of butter, clarified butter, and then just pour it over the meat. And that hits the meat and that's what causes your sizzle.
Uh-huh.
And that's what you're listening to.
What's clarified butter? What is that?
Clarified butter is, I used to come in and put 4 pound. They're each thing is a 1 pound wrapped butter, unsalted, and I'd take a stainless steel pan. I'd squeeze 4 of these. I'd put it on the grill and medium heat, and it would melt it. And then you melt it, and then all of the solids separate from the water in the butter. And then you have foam on top, and you have this caca on the bottom. And then you scrape that foam off, and then you pour the liquefied butter into another pan. in another high-sided stainless pan, and that can stay out all day. And when you're done, you put it in the fridge, and it'll harden up, and then you warm it up, and it's clarified butter. And it won't burn. It has a higher burn point. You should take a pound of butter and try it sometime.
So I don't understand what I do with it. So once the butter melts, then what do I do?
Then you set it aside and let it cool.
Okay.
And then you scrape, what I used to do is I'd set that whole thing aside, cool it down, and take a skewer and poke it all the way through the top, and then tip it and drain off all the water that was on the bottom, settled on the bottom. And then you can warm it up, and you have clarified butter. It's a butter you can, you know, have on your back of your stove, and you can take a scoop and put it in a pan, and you don't get that sizzle or pop or anything. It's just clear, pure butter, and it's a higher burn point, so you can crank your saute pan up a little bit.
And not have to worry, because it doesn't...
Have things start to smoke on you.
Got it.
It'll smoke if you overdo it, but it gives you an advantage on doing things like that.
And that's what you would use every time that you... That's the butter that you would cook with?
Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely, cook with clarified butter.
Can you buy it?
No, I don't. That's a good question. I can't answer that. I think you have to make it. See, the dairies, you know, they add their whatever they do, their byproducts and their water to it for the weight, and it's, you know, you just have to melt it, clarify it, and there you go, and you're in the front row.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's good stuff, and it's butter, but no side tastes.
Here's an email, Mac. Does the chef have a good recipe for sugar cookies, or is he just a consumer? It sounds like his wife is the baker in the family.
I do not have that recipe for sugar cookies. My wife has all the dessert recipes, except for a few that I used at the restaurant. But sugar cookies is not one of my in my repertoire.
But are you a consumer of?
I like sugar cookies, but my favorite cookie is the pecan sandies that Beth makes. With little bits of pecan and toffee.
Oh.
And oh my God.
My favorite cookie of all time was my mother's Aunt Tina's oatmeal cookies. They weren't you know, some oatmeal cookies get big and fat. They were not big fat cookies. They were relatively, you know, thin cookies, and you would press. She made the dough, and then you would take a tumbler, for those of you that are familiar with it, with a flat bottom, and you would get the bottom wet, and you would dip it in sugar, and then you would smash the cookie down, and it would leave the imprint with sugar on it, and they were the best. In fact, my mom sent me a box of them in Iraq, I think. And
that's cool.
Yeah. And no, I take that back. I think Susan did it. But I mean, and they showed up, and I mean, it was like when I say a box, I mean you're going to send it to Iraq. I mean, it wasn't like she baked a dozen cookies. I mean, there had to be 100 cookies in there. And you and you share them with everybody, right? That's the rule. You open them, and it's if it's food from home, man, everybody's got to get some. And yep. But I just remember everybody going, oh, my God, these are awesome. I said, yeah, get the fuck away from here, man. You had enough. I've shared enough. Right? Just go ahead and stop it. But my mother's, the recipe, Aunt Tina's oatmeal cookies on the website. You know, I let me just see if we have recipes on the website because there's been so many things that we put up on either on the read board. I don't even find it. So I can't. There's no cookies? You can go to the read board and blog, and there's a world famous recipe for carrot casserole is on there. You can also go to there's the thing on the website. I consolidated the blog and the read board right into one thing, and so if you go in there, you'll find the All Marine Radio Head Chef's Cookbook by Kim and Beth Holmes, and if you click on that, let me see if the links. If you click on that, there's a picture of Kimbo and standing at the bar at Sanders in his white surgical costume. Go to the homepage, scroll down the page until you see category. On the far right, and select food. Okay, so it says, for all of Kim and Beth's recipes that we have discussed on All Marine Radio, just click here. And if you click on that, you go to this, you go to a folder, and it has Miss B's baked beans, braised brisket, right? And you see all the images that go with that. Chicken and caramelized onion grilled cheese sandwich, right? And then you have a whole, if you scroll down, right, there's Kim's Christmas list. Blender, crock pot, food processor, knives, a mixer, super gloves, a toaster, turkey roasting pan and rack, turkey roasting pan and rack number 2, Mexican corn chowder, that sounds good to me today. But if you keep scrolling down, there's a series of recipes that come under Sanders famous, right? So you'll see that. Remember the salmon burger you talked about? Salmon burger with tangy coleslaw? Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. But it says Sanders famous, creme caramel to die for, all right? Crab cakes, key lime pie, all right? And there's pictures that go with this. Prime rib, a whole series of pictures of prime rib with discussions. Remoulade sauce, pumpkin cheesecake. So there's all kinds of great, stuff in there. And if you go further down, right, Thanksgiving side dishes, stuffing, whipped yams, spicy pears, all right? And then there's one of Kim's favorites, cranberry pear relish is in there. Another one is scalloped corn. So anyway, it's all there. All you got to do is you go to the read board on All Marine Radio, and if you just click on the link there that just follow it. For all of Kim and Beth Holmes' recipes we've discussed on All Marine Radio, just click here. Click on that word, and it takes you to a folder that has all of those recipes. So there you have it. All right, big man. I don't want to keep you beyond your limit. So
hey,
first of all, thank you for doing this. Glad you feel better. You sound great, by the way. Just so you know.
Thank you very much, Mac. It's good to be back on the air, and I think I want to do. I gave my recipe for scallop oysters to my sister for Thanksgiving. And I'm going to do them for Christmas with the steak. And it consists of a pie dish, Ritz crackers, oysters, butter, cream, and pepper. And I'm going to write that and send it to you so you can post it for next week, because we got to start talking about Christmas food.
Got it.
And that is something that should be on every Christmas table. All right. Or scalloped oysters.
Somebody just sent me a link, and they said, hey, Mac, how many of the top 20 movies do you think Kim can name on the AFI, American Film Institute, I think? Top 100, right? This was initially came out in 1997, and then it came out in 1998. Then it was updated in 2007. Okay, so.
We did that. We did that, and I was miserable.
Number one.
Absolutely.
Number one.
Horrend.
Yeah, number one, Citizen Kane. Number two. Number two is The Godfather.
The Godfather, yes.
All right. Number three.
Gone with the Wind.
Number three, Casablanca. Number four, Raging Bull. Number five, Singing in the Rain. Number six, Gone with the Wind. Number seven, Lawrence of Arabia. Number eight is the most recent film to make this list, and that is Schindler's List. Number nine, Vertigo. Number ten, Wizard of Oz. I think Wizard of Oz should be further north than 10. Number 11, City Lights is a Charlie Chaplin film. Number 12, The Searchers is a John Ford film. Never watched it. Number 13, Star Wars. Number 14, Psycho. Number 15, 2001 Space Odyssey. Number 16, Sunset Boulevard. Number 17, Kim and I both love it, The Graduate. Number 18 is a Buster Keaton film from 1926 called The General. Not sure about that. Number 19 is On the Waterfront. And on the number 20 is It's a Wonderful Life. 21 is Chinatown, which I love.
God, Jack Nicholson was great in that
movie. And then Chinatown's an awesome, awesome, awesome movie. Yeah. So that's the top 21 movies, according to AFI's list of 2007. But, Citizen Kane, I've tried to watch that. It's like, it's more of an artsy flick. And I think that the top film on that list ought to be more than an artsy flick. That's why, to me, if I was going to name the top movie on that list, I would either.
What number was Citizen Kane?
Number one.
Number one.
Yeah.
Well, do you know that that was written on the ranch in Victorville?
No.
And they're doing a remake of Citizen Kane?
No.
Of the writing of the movie?
I don't know.
As we speak right now.
Whoa.
Starring Gary Oldman. And I don't know who plays John Houseman.
It was black and white, big movie, blah, 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 blah. Now, let me tell you, I don't know how Godfather Part Two isn't in here. Right? On the top.
Gotta include all the Godfathers.
I don't know. Part Three I thought it sucked. But Godfather Part Two, I thought arguably was better than Godfather Part One. But Godfather Part One was huge. That's why I would say, Wizard of Oz. I mean, it is a, in my opinion, I mean, it's a movie that spans generations of people. It spans generations of, you know, of Americans and people around the world. And it's kind of a magical film. So I don't know how Wizard of Oz is below Singing in the Rain. Come on, man.
Singing in the Rain is one spectacular movie.
I agree, but come on. It's not bigger than Wizard of Oz. Wizard of Oz is Singing in the Rain shown annually? You know? No, it's not. No.
I see it all the time. Movie channel.
I know, if you watch that crap. But I mean, not that crap, but did I say that? I didn't mean that.
Fox has been on about three times this last week.
What has been?
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Hello, come on. But it used to be a huge night when it would come on. Remember, nationally, during over-the-air TV, it would come on, I want to say, once a year. And it's not a short movie, either. It's a couple hours long, right, Wizard of Oz? I mean, and I know, because I used to, I could, I didn't, I, it used to scare the shit out of me, and I wouldn't watch it.
It still scares the shit out of Beth.
No, I used to, and I was like 10 or 11, man. I did not, and what it did was I used to think that, you know, I'd see shadows in my bedroom. The people across the where my bedroom was on the side of the house,
yeah.
Right, they had a porch light on across the fence, and there was a tree at the fence. And so when I'd go to bed, there'd be shadows moving in my bedroom. And I swear to God, I could see, like, the Wicked Witch's face and the those fucking monkeys. Those, like, those, yeah, those fuckers.
I got to take the Wicked Witch.
Oh, man. So I would not. I mean, my sisters would watch it with my mom, and I would be in my bedroom playing with G.I. Joes, man. I would not go watch that thing.
Oh, God, that's funny.
I was not. The Wizard of Oz.
That's a scary movie.
Yeah, no shit. No shit. All right, man. Have a great. I'm glad I got to see my son and Susie
so
and Finn.
Yeah. All three of them. And your son is just a peach of a guy.
He's a good dude. All right. Kim, have a great weekend.
See you next week. Bye bye.
There you have it. The one and only Pete Kimball Holmes here on a Friday edition that now seems like a Friday edition because of that guy. This song makes me happy. Probably because it makes me think of Kim and laughing with him. And that we stole the song from another friend of ours. Van Morrison, The Bright Side of the Road. Yeah, Citizen Kane. Whatever, man. Vertigo, which is an Alfred Hitchcock movie, which I love. Greater than The Wizard of Oz? I don't think so. Godfather Part 2 is number 32. So, as I said earlier in the program, if you haven't checked out some of the great interviews and things that did this week, check them out. They're good. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, honestly. And again, as I said, it started on Monday. Oh. Yeah, on Monday there's an interview that I did with Emma. On Wednesday, Chris Woodbridge. Talking about General Berger's force design and the process and what he's seen of it. That was on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Mike Etor. Mike's written a great book about Marine Corps leadership and how it applies in business. And don't believe that it doesn't. It does. But what is Marine Corps leadership? And that's probably the first thing you need to sit down and think about. What is it? And if you have in your head what General Mattis says about you've got to love him, then you're pretty close. If you have in your head a drill instructor that's yelling at somebody, you're not really close, right? And you'll fail. So then yesterday we talked about the Afghanistan papers on the Lynch and Kenny event. So all, in my opinion, great stuff. And, I mean, that discussion had made me go and read more. You know, and part of one of the things I'm researching is, so nobody ever quits, and that's how Germany does what Germany did in World War II, because everybody makes ethical and moral rationalizations that allow you to continue to do things that you don't believe in. How did they do that? Anyway, on a Friday, have a great weekend. Alex Hollings will join us on Monday. Yeah, Alex got some breaking news. Yeah, so we'll hear that on Monday. So on a Friday, All Marine Radio, wishing you a Merry Christmas. If you're not a Christmas person, what's up? Have a great weekend. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. Practice post-traumatic winning. Just don't listen to it. And why do we live the high life? Because as Jack Riley says, we owe it to people who, for whatever reason in life, don't get the opportunity to. We owe them to live great lives. So do that. That's right. You can do it. Trust me. On a Friday, All Marine Radio is over and... out.